This is what the Lord says. Cursed is the one who trusts in man, who draws strength from mere flesh, and whose heart turns away from the Lord. That person will be like bush in the wasteland. They will not see prosperity when it comes. They will dwell in the parched places of the desert, in the salt land where no one lives. But blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. I did one better than you today, Jen. I didn't even bring my glasses, so we'll see how I go. I don't know if that's going to work. Today I was talking about lament and the role of lament in caring for others and to help us be resilient in response to stuff that David Cohen had said. But I will admit to not feeling terribly resilient. I had a really hellish day on Friday that resulted in not less than 3 incident reports. and it has taken a bit of something from me. So we'll see how I go. When I heard David Cohen speak, something lit up in me. Like, I really heard it and there was a lightning bolt moment and I thought, yep, I want to talk about that. And I emailed Claire and I don't know what it was. I don't know what it was that I wanted to tell you. I didn't write it down foolishly. I was like, oh, I'll remember that. But when Claire contacted me, I was like, okay, well, there was something, so I'll push myself and I'll try and find it again. I don't know if I have, but we'll give it a red hot go. And for me, this is about reviewing and responding in looking at what has already been spoken about and considering its impact on my life. I'm not a biblical scholar and I'm not a theologian. I'm not going to try and talk to you about the theology of Jeremiah, but it's a personal reflection rather than specific teaching or instruction. And for me, it's about how I can use Jeremiah to be resilient in caring and loving others, because I don't always do it. I'm a professional carer. There are a couple of us here in the audience who have jobs that involve getting paid to care for other people. But the reality is that lots of us in this congregation have really significant care responsibilities. It's a part of our life. It's how we live. It's how we choose to be in the world. It's an act of Christian living. And I'm certainly not suggesting that I have it down or I know how to do it, or that because I get paid for it, I can do it better than other people. I feel quite confident there are times where other people are doing it better than me. I don't feel like I have special knowledge around this. So just to recap some of the stuff that David Cohen spoke about, and I did go back and listen to it again. So Jeremiah is identified as the weeping prophet, and he's unique in that he bears his soul. He expresses both opposition to God, but he is also persistent in his obedience to God. He holds both of those things, which is quite a complicated dynamic. He's anointed as the prophet, and this is central to his being. It's kind of a primal thing for him, a burning imperative he can't get away from, he can't run from. And for him, he identifies, or he is told by God, there is this need to tell the people you've moved away from God and you're failing in your obedience and your faithfulness and you're failing in your actions. And that's kind of something that is driven into him, burns him. And then from chapter 11 to 20, there's this really cyclical theme within the text, and it repeats 5 times. There's this cycle of repeat. And that repeat kind of tells us something about God and about God in the world. So God speaks. So the cycle is that God speaks and he calls out, be faithful and obedient and worship only me and repent from your unfaithfulness and your unethical behaviour. And then Jeremiah acts. Now, Jeremiah doesn't just call out, you stop it, you're being naughty. It's a really kind of action-oriented thing. There are symbolic acts, so the going to the potter's wheel, it's very visual, it's very much him trying to connect with people and hold people and get them to really understand his words, even though he keeps failing, he keeps trying and persisting. And then Jeremiah is rejected And then Jeremiah laments. And in that, there's also God's lament. God laments this fact that he continues to be rejected. In rejecting Jeremiah, God is rejected. So Jeremiah's lament sits deep within his experience of shame. The language he uses is really personal. It's visceral. And it reflects his experience of being an individual in who's being shunned in a collectivist society. We can't forget that this is an honour-shame culture, and the isolation is the most painful of experiences. There can be nothing worse than to be alone and to be outside of your family. He's told, don't go to the funeral, don't go to the feasts, don't participate with this community. They are not for you. You are outside of it. And that's a really deeply, leaves him with a really deep sense of shame. So that's kind of the recap of what David talked about. Some of what David talked about. So in this, in reflecting in this, I was kind of like, well, what context do we have that Jeremiah doesn't? And a very, you know, Sunday school answer is that Jesus' life. We have the love reflected in Jesus' life. That's how I have more in this story than Jeremiah did, who lived it. Because God's motivator in the end is love. It's not obedience. Even when he's going back to Jeremiah, even when there's these five cycles, he's calling for obedience, but that obedience is to love him. That's actually the primary thing that he's calling for. So I see that Jesus heard, in Jesus' story, I see that Jesus heard God's call to faithfulness and obedience, and he undertook a symbolic act on behalf of others, but he didn't require others to change. He called them to it, but he acted without that. And this act was corporate, since Jesus existed in a collectivist culture, but it was also a direct action through love on an individual level. It was for me. It was out of his love for me that this happened. So that's kind of where I got to the first time around, and then I went at it again. And I was like, okay, well, let's bring this all together. And why do we need to consider Jeremiah? Why did I think it was important that I speak on this? What was it that lit up in me? And I think for me, I can't dismiss Jeremiah, but I can hold it in the light of the New Testament. And I know I'm not telling you anything you don't know. I know that that's kind of how most of us read the New Testament, is that we look at it and then we hold, okay, so let's shine that light of the New Testament back on that. So then I think, so how can I care for others and myself? This is a really nice, easy scaffold that should be really easy to follow. So God speaks, I act, I may be rejected, I lament, and then I go back and God speaks again and I act, and it's a really nice scaffold, and Jeremiah did, so it should be really easy. So I'll unpack each of those things. So for me, God speaks is I see a need. And that's been something kind of embedded for me. I see pain and suffering and injustice. And this is very much sits within kind of the stuff that happened to me when I was kind of in that very individuating psychological period of adolescence. There was quite a few things that happened, quite a number of people who suffered losses in their lives. And so then I act with love and grace, but I also act with arrogance, and I act with limits, and I act with humanity. For me, the act, the need, the call is always about an unmet need in a child. Even when I work with adults, I'm responding to the child that is within them that has an unmet need, which can be quite patronising sometimes. And I know in me that comes from that time kind of in adolescence where, so it started with someone very close to me who lost their parent, and I couldn't meet him. I couldn't be what he needed. And I was a child. You know, there's the adult part of me recognises I was a child and I couldn't meet him, and it wasn't my job, and it was the adults around him. But we all failed. Like, it was a train wreck. It continues to be a train wreck. That life is good enough but I feel its loss. I feel what happened in that time when the anger that he had that we didn't meet. And that happened. So in my adolescence, I had that death, and then I had probably five of my very good friends lost a parent or a sibling. And then also my sister had her cohort, had probably, she attended about 10 funerals from the age of 15 to 25 of people who had CF related illness. And all that was happening around me, and I could just see it, and I could never fix it. So for me, God seeks and I see that need, and then I act. And that act comes from love and grace and a need in me, an arrogance, a limit, and my humanity. And then I might be rejected and I might fail. So I've been to university for 4 years, and then I worked for 7 years, then I went back to university for 2 years, then I did 12 months supervised practice, so I really should know what the hell I'm doing now, and I fail. I still don't solve the problem. And sometimes that's because 7 years of uni and supervised practice actually isn't enough. Sometimes that's because I'm not enough. I don't have it in me to do what is needed. And sometimes it's because of the other person, because they are not in a place to meet me. They have not got what it takes to make the change that might need to happen. But sometimes it's because the world sucks and it's hard and it's overwhelming and change is slow and people's needs are beyond what I can meet and the world is not meeting their needs and there is injustice. So then the theory is that then I lament, and this is the crucial part of the picture, because if I don't lament, then I focus on my own failing and I blame myself and I shame myself. Or I look at someone else's failing and I blame others and I shame them and I say, well, I should have, or they should have, or why didn't they, or why didn't I, or they should have. But at the base of those, why didn't I, why didn't they, is the question of why must we suffer and why does the injustice persist and why is it still there and why aren't I good enough or why aren't they good enough? That sits in that lament. And the lament kind of allows us, John talked about shaking our fist at God and David talked about it as well, if you don't shake your fist at God, then you turn your back on God. You know, it's that shake your fist at God type thing, that expressing our sense of hopelessness and saying out loud the things that are hidden in our heart that we don't necessarily want to look at. And there's reflecting and learning. And for me, there's also grief. And that grief is always there, that grief of, but I failed again and it's not there and we didn't meet that need. And it's still a train wreck. It's always there. So the thing is, I fail at this too. So instead of lament, I turn away, I hide, and I try and fix it, and I stop looking. So when we blame others, and when we blame ourselves, and when we turn away, we stop seeing the circumstances around the world that make it overwhelming and hard and slow to change, because they make us feel helpless. So we stop looking at them. And the lament is actually what helps us to see the humanity, that helps us be in that place of seeing someone and seeing that actually it's not their failure and it's not my failure. It's a crappy world that is not doing what it should for the community around it. And sometimes the opposite happens and I get stuck in lament. And there's only hopelessness. And I get stuck there and I cannot move from lament into seeing the need because my heart is shredded. And so much happens around us that contributes to that. So, you know, 2-3 years ago, we had... We had Greg's dad die.
Then we had Mario die. And then I had surgery. And work was really shitty. I had a team that weren't doing what they needed for me, although I did have people around me who were doing what I needed. And I worked for DCP. I worked for DCP for 10 years. And I kept seeing the story over and over again. And I kept acting and I kept listening and I kept coming back. And I learnt and I grew and I had good people around me who helped me in that. And then I couldn't anymore. And then I couldn't. I just was heartbroken. And I got to the point where ads on TV would make me cry at home. I couldn't be what I needed to be for my kids. And I couldn't hold my family in the way they needed to be held. And I walked away. I left. I left TCP and I felt like a failure because I left them. And I often say in all of my jobs, this is not a cult. You are allowed to leave. I say it to the staff I supervise. I say it to myself. We are allowed to leave and we are allowed to have lives outside of our job. But I didn't really want it. For 18 months, I'd been telling myself I wasn't okay and I needed to go. And I just needed to finish my supervised practice and then I could go. And I still didn't go. It was only when I didn't get my job, I applied for my job and I didn't get it. I was like, oh no, I really need to go. They're screwing with me and I really need to go. But it was only then. And it took that for me to leave. So this is as much a letter to my future self. This is as much about me reminding myself of this for later when I get back there, because I probably will. This is about sharing with you my reflection, but also reminding myself that this is how it is. Because I know there'll be times in the future when I get stuck in hopelessness and I need to shelter my heart again. I need to take it away and hold it and say, actually, I am going to look after myself now. I need to rebuild so that I can lament, so that I can move from lament to hearing, and so that I can move from hearing to action. Because if I stay in lament, my heart just keeps getting broken. But the other part of the story is that in leaving, I didn't leave. I just changed direction. I found a new need and I found a new place. And I moved from CPFS, where I was dealing with child protection victims, and I moved to the association where actually I'm dealing with child protection and victims. Because it turns out when you leave one job where you've got a certain skill set and you go to a new job and say, I've got this skill set, they're like, oh, great, that's yours. But I'm better at protecting myself and it's different work. The system is different and it holds me better. So I still have the same heartbreak, but it's in a new context and it's renewing because I can see new things and new... I've learnt a lot. I've learnt a heap in the last 2 years about kind of ways I can do things and the job I can do and how I can help people. But also it feels renewing. I feel like there are places I can be and do things. And so that's what this was as well. It was a reminder to myself that there will be times where I take action and I feel called to take action and I will fail, just as Jeremiah failed. And that the lament, being in lament, has its place and it helps us to be with people in a real way. When we lament, we are actually meeting their need as well, and we are actually growing ourselves and meeting our own needs. So I get where Jeremiah was coming from. I don't always do as well as Jeremiah did. I don't think I have a 1 from 5 hit rate where I come back to him first. But the thing that I realized today while we were sitting here is that when I fail, when I blame myself and when I blame someone else, and when I turn away because I don't want to look anymore at the shitty stuff that's happening around me, that's where you guys fit in. That's why I keep coming back, because you remind me of what we are called to and how to be in the world by your examples, by your stories of joy and love, by your tunnels of love. You bring me back to hearing God. So you are very important, which was what was missing, I think, from my story. So that's it. I'm happy to take questions, but I don't know that it's a questioning sort of sermon.
I don't have a question, but a great big thank you. For me, just for your courage, your vulnerability, and you living the lived theology of that for you is huge. So thank you. And the encouragement, there's so much I echo on, resonate within your story. And the thing I want, what I've put together is, and I'm going to put some writing of my own out on the list that speaks to my journey with some of this stuff, a poem called The Tender Heart of Sadness. But what I want to speak to is you put together something for me. Most of you know that Parker Palmer, Richard Rohr is huge for me. Parker's got a lovely thing about the heart and heartbreak, a distinction that I think is, where he says, if we live our lives and care for the world full-heartedly, it's guaranteed that our heart will get broken repeatedly. But at that point, we actually have a choice. And his language echoes yours. He says, we have a choice at that point where our heart gets broken and shattered, or whether it gets broken into a bigger space of compassion and care for ourselves and the world. And that, applying that to myself, about how I hold the tension of my life and allow my heart to be broken so that it breaks open rather than shatters, is, I think, what you're speaking to. Thank you.